newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and on Saturdays at 4. Brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. CSU Channel Islands, no matter which other academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And Sansum Clinic, whose multi-specialty team of medical professionals have been providing quality care to you and your family for 99 years. And we're here today with Kelly Moore, Santa Barbara Unified School District Safety Coordinator. Thank you for being here, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us what a safety coordinator is.
So for the district, I coordinate all of the safety plans, the emergency response, developing those plans with the individual school sites, and I coordinate safety things throughout the district.
Is there a officer on each campus?
There is not. There's kind of an officer assigned to each campus, but there's not one specifically on each campus. So we have one on each high school campus, two sheriffs out in the county area, one police officer at Santa Barbara High School. But that police officer at Santa Barbara High School is also responsible for the other elementary and junior highs.
So the people that are on staff for the high schools, do they report to you?
They do not. They work for their individual agencies. I just coordinate like a liaison between the agencies and them because of my past experience.
And your past experience is interesting. You were a commander in the Sheriff's Department.
That's correct.
And that must have been a pretty cool job.
It was. I mean, it took me a little while to get there, but I mean, I spent 34 years in law enforcement and finally retired as a commander. I was the commander of the South County Patrol Operations Bureau, which provided me a unique experience because I was also part of the emergency manager response for all of the crisis in Santa Barbara County.
You know, it's so interesting. As a citizen, you tend to look at first responders as a group without any identification of individuals. And I remember after the mud flows and the fires, I was at an event and I saw the captain in charge of the Highway Patrol in Santa Barbara, a woman.
Cindy Ponce.
And I said, oh, my God. It's Captain Ponce. You're a superstar. And she started to laugh. And some guy with her who was, 6'10". I mean, he wasn't, but it seemed like to me,
right,
who was with her, you know, started to laugh. You know, and I said, well, do you listen to her? And he says, yeah, I listen to her. But, you know, you guys became superstars because of all of the news that came out and the FaceTime you were getting on television.
Right. Well, I think she did.
Yeah, she did.
She has a good presence, right?
Yeah,
She's a very good talker.
Yeah.
I didn't get in front of the camera so much because
you were busy.
That and the sheriff is the head of and the spokesperson for our agency in those types of crises. So he's the one that's rightfully out front.
So did you always want to be a police officer?
Ever since I was a kid, right? One of the things that, you know, I wanted to play baseball. I wanted to be a football player. But I always had this second choice or first choice, I guess, because it was always the most consistent was being a police officer. And I went to college for that right out of high school and then began my career in 1984.
So for the teens, this, you know, AHA has a lot of teens that, you know, sort of are looking for what their life is going to be like. Is it true, I've heard from people, that to become a police officer, you have to, it's to your advantage to go to a private academy and actually pay for it yourself. So is that true in order to get a head start?
Anything that you can do to get a head start certainly helps, but it's not a requirement by any means. Most agencies are still sufficiently short on staffing that they're still paying for people to go through the academy. And if you can get it, it's good work, because you go through an academy that's 6 months long and they're paying you to go and giving you a salary to go as well.
It's better than paying them.
Right. That's correct.
So when I first came here from New York, I had no idea what a sheriff was, because in New York, there are, at least in the city, there are no sheriffs. So about 6 months after we moved in, a sheriff sergeant knocked on our door to tell us that there had been some robberies in the area. And I said, well, while I got you, I just wanted to warn us. And I said, while I got you here, can you tell me the difference between the sheriff's department and the Santa Barbara City Police Department? He said, yeah, we work for a living.
Right. I'm sure that went over well, right?
Well, I laughed. Right. But I guess there is a difference, there is more to it than that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's the difference really is one works for a municipality and the sheriff's department works for the unincorporated areas of the county. Mm-hmm. And contracts. We have some contracts.
Yeah. So is it true? Is there still a shortage? Is it difficult, given the high cost of living in this area, to attract people that can afford to live here?
So there's that. Obviously, we've always had that issue. And you could pay somebody a bunch of money to come here, and you're always going to have the person that's going to take their money south 30 miles where they can get more bang for their buck, or north 30 miles where they can get more bang for their buck. So you'll never catch up to that. But there's an awful lot of things that are influencing the environment and the ability to attract qualified candidates now, and that's including the environment and the climate around law enforcement and what people perceptions of law enforcement. So we're having all kinds of struggles right now to hire good quality people.
Yeah, it's not true in Santa Barbara like it is in the big cities. But, I mean, to be a police officer in a big city today is you don't know who your friends are. It must be really awful to walk down the street and you don't know what's going to happen, because people have such animosity against people who actually protect them. Santa Barbara, I don't see that. I think people sort of appreciate
it. Some of that, but it's not the volume that you're seeing, because you don't have the density. Uh-huh. And so there is that as well. But we're not immune to those types of issues.
So you've turned your attention to one of the big problems of the day, which is in a narrow sense, school safety. In a larger sense, you can almost consider it, you know, gun control and mental health issues that are facing the public today. So your role as coordinator, you're involved in, I guess, a whole bunch of activities. Let's start with actual preparedness. What type of preparedness do the schools do?
So when I first came into the district, my first task was really to assess what are we doing, what do we have, where do we need to go, and how do we get there. Right?
You were the first one, right? There's never been a job.
That's correct.
So you had to write your own job, in a sense.
That's correct. I'm sure I wrote it different than they really had envisioned it, but that's okay, right? Yeah. So because our main focus is really keeping our campus is safe, and how do we do that? And you alluded to it, that it's not just a school safety problem, but it's a gun issue. It's a really more of a community issue, because anything that affects our schools, which are often the center of our communities, it affects everything. And so we're really looking at it from a very large perspective. But as we're going into preparedness, we're taking them from what was the mentality of doing fire drills to doing scenario-based drills on very different scenarios, including medical emergencies, earthquakes, fire drills, acts of violence, and those types of things. I give them a scenario, and everyone does the same type of drill on their campus throughout the district each month.
Now, what about identifying problems before they happen? Is there any coordination with the psychology people that you could say, you know, we have to look out or talk to this child? I mean, is there sort of some kind of proactive way of anticipating where there might be problems?
Yeah, so one of the things that I noticed very quickly when I came to the district was there was a lot of things that were being attempted throughout the district, but they weren't connected to each other, and including safety. And safety is not just being prepared. It's identifying, preventing, intervening where appropriate and how appropriate at the appropriate levels. So what we've done is taken all of the very robust mental health, emotional programs and strategies that they had for identifying those. We've connected them to our safety and vice versa. So the big buzzword today is threat assessments and how are we doing those. But really the threat assessment is done under the strategy of identifying behaviors before they become concerning, and so that we can properly identify and support the child and or people who are being bullied or people who are bullying, and trying to figure out how we can support them and really get them on the right path and let them understand and educate them on what that could cause 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Sansom Clinic. We're there at the beginning.
And all the little and big steps along the way.
200 physicians for your every need.
A healthcare system where all profits go back into our community's health.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system. Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansom Clinic. Good for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kelly Moore, SBUSD Safety Coordinator. And before the break, you mentioned intervention and, you know, hoping to find problems before they become real problems. And one of the things that I know the school system here is doing, which is quite enlightened and something that AHA has been pushing, is restorative justice as a way of dealing with problems, as a way of sort of getting to the heart of what the issues are rather than just punishment.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Sure. There's an education piece, and it's been shown to be very effective. The biggest problem that we have seen sometimes is the overuse of one system or the other, right? And that's what causes us, it really is trying to identify the appropriate use at the appropriate time. Restorative justice and restorative approaches should be used liberally, and they should be used initially. But at some point, if those aren't working, we need to look at something else.
And when you plan for a problem, What is it that are there certain things that the national sort of literature tells you what to look for? I mean, are there certain things, certain tells that you can use and teach people how to sort of pick up on to anticipate problems?
So you're looking at best practices and
right.
and behavior right. indicators and so
like
forth.
Why invent the wheel of this?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But the problem is people, and I'm looking at best practices from an overview, a high level perspective, because when people glean onto best practices, that indicates that there's a best practice, right? And all of these safety things that we're dealing with are crisis, they're emergencies. And by the sheer definition of crisis and emergencies, there's chaos and there's different things happening and people are getting overwhelmed. So you really have to teach people to react to the situations that they're faced with and that are in front of them. Because if I tell you, you need to do this every time, you're going to fail because the circumstances are going to be different every time.
So the New York City Police Department is arguably, maybe second to Santa Barbara, but arguably the best trained police force in the country. I mean, they really have a very robust training program. And apparently the success for an average police officer is about 35% when he's firing his gun in a real situation, 35% accuracy. Which is maybe good for what the situation is, but it's certainly not a high probability that no one else is going to get hurt. So I bring that up sort of as a loaded question. What do you think of the whole notion of arming people in schools, given the fact that if in New York they're only getting 35% accurate, what's some teacher who doesn't have the experience and training going to do with a gun with a classroom full of kids?
So I think that the question is a little bit deeper than that, right? So there's a lot of people who are advocating that and a lot of people who have a lot of evidence that shows that that's a viable option. And I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but here's the reality is you have to train. You have to keep current. You have to have a mindset. All of the peace officers in the state of California have to go through a psychological examination to see that they're fit to psychologically and emotionally fit to do that kind of work. And so having that as an added burden to the school systems and teachers who don't want to do that, there's a national shortage of teachers. Right. And teachers generally don't get in the position of education or the career of education for the purpose of carrying a firearm or to reacting to active shooters or acts of violence or emergencies like that. Although the environment and the climate's changed, so that's now part of their job, whether they like it or not. Actually having a firearm is an individual district's, but it's problematic. It's very problematic for me.
When I was going to school, there was always somebody in the school that was in charge of, breaking up a fight or seeing a controversy. That doesn't rise to the level of something that you would be concerned about or would look at. Let's assume there's a fight in the school. Does that then, when the fight's broken up, do those two kids or three kids get looked at to see if there's more to it? Or is that just, a one-off kind of thing?
So historically, it's a one-off kind of thing, and they would break it up, shake hands and, right. and get some discipline, get suspended or detention or counseling or something like that. Nowadays, we can't do that. Now we have to look at the reason behind it. Why did they act violently? Why were they unable to cope or problem solve or come to agreements before it got to that level? We have to look at that, and we have to look at the propensity for violence in any student as a reaction or as a viable option to another solution.
So everyone thinks of Santa Barbara as a haven for rich people, but ironically, I think the last statistics were that Santa Barbara was like first or second in free lunch programs because there's such a high poverty level in this community. And one of the things that I've had both last three superintendents of the district on, and they all said the same thing. One of their priorities has always been to try to get people to be in a homogeneous group, even though they're not homogeneous, both parents and kids. Is that an additional problem? You've got kids from totally different backgrounds, and that leads to bullying all the way up to all kinds of really bad things. Mm-hmm. Is this a problem particular to a community like Santa Barbara, where you wouldn't suspect to be a particular problem, but because there's such a diverse group economically and socially that there may be even greater problems?
I don't believe there's greater problems than any other school. I think the last statistics I heard was 58% of our students are at or below the poverty level. The county has one of the highest poverty levels in public schools in the state. But I don't think we have any more issues than other schools do. I think that's a societal issue, and we're going to continue to have those issues. Because we can't force people to like people.
Well, here's a theory based on no knowledge at all. I'm going to throw out something I have no. I'm just talking out of my ears here, but I would think that one of the precursors to problems is bullying. You know, bullying seems to me to actually indicate not only a lack of understanding about other people, but also a tendency to use violence as a way of making a statement that. Maybe because of your own insecurities or whatever, you pick on somebody smaller than you. Is that a precursor to serious violence when you see bullying?
So I'm going to validate your coming from a position of no knowledge at all.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the number one grievance cited by past active shooters or people who are involved in active violence is being bullied at a younger age. The problem that we have is the victim of bullying is defined by the victim themselves. So some people could be subjected to a set of actions that they're okay with. They have a response to it. You and I might classify that as bullying, but the person doesn't. They cope well with it. They see it and they go, I'll deal with it later, right? But the classic bullying is coming from a position of power, and it's from that position that people are doing some sort of act or something and against somebody with less power. So whenever you come from that position, you're going to have issues.
Well, but does that – okay, but the question is, does that behavior indicate something worse? If somebody is just a perpetual bullier, does that mean that they're – Well, either one, either the bullier or the bullyee, is that something?
Right.
That
so you touched on something, right? Yeah. So the number one grievance for an active shooter is bullying.
Yeah, they were bullied.
Yeah. Right.
So
here's the issue is the number one target is the person who bullied them. So the victim is the bullier, and so you have to sit down. So yes, it can. Be the impetus for violence in the future. The problem is we have a lot of bullying that doesn't ever escalate to that point. So identifying this act of bullying as the act that caused this is very difficult.
Boy, am I glad I'm not in high school anymore. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
With some health providers, you get the impression that the final goal is profit. But Sansum Clinic is a nonprofit. Their final goal is health.
Sansum Clinic was started by doctors and is still directed by doctors dedicated to offering the very best in healthcare and healing for our patients.
A nonprofit organization where all earnings go back into continually improving healthcare for our community.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansum Clinic. Good for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kelly Moore, Santa Barbara Unified School District Safety Coordinator. What about, and we're talking about a whole bunch of bad things, but it's not to represent that this is the world out there. It's just things that we just have to deal with. So continuing with some bad things, the whole Me Too movement for adults sort of has awakened everyone to how boys and girls should really behave with each other. Is this come under your purview, too, about how there's, you know, it's not a shooting, but it's harassment, where you see harassment based on dating or sexuality or whatever.
Yeah, so it really doesn't, other than the fact that part of the safety aspect is emotional wellness, mental health, how people treat each other, the social emotional learning. So it doesn't really come on directly under me. It comes under my boss, Dr. Fran Wagnick. And it really is part of the mission is to get people to understand how to treat people, how to behave, how to socialize, how to interact with people in an appropriate, positive, supportive manner. And the idea and strategy behind that is if we can do that, then we can prevent a lot of emotional issues, we can mental health issues, behavioral issues, violence issues, and so forth, relationship issues down the road, if we can really cultivate that at an early age. And currently, all of that is infused in all of the curriculum that we engage in.
We had a guest on about a year ago, it's the Suicide Prevention Group, and what they were talking about was how they've gone, I know, to Santa Barbara High, and try to get the kids to feel that it's to normalize the whole issue of getting psychological help, even to the extent where, and you know, this is a slippery slope, but where you really think somebody is in danger, to actually go and speak to someone and say, you know, my friend here needs some help. Mm-hmm. That's something that I can't imagine that anything bad about that, but does that include also the possibility of violence as well?
Yeah, so we have. Since it was initially rolled out the year before I got here, and that's our anonymous reporting app called Stop It. Mm-hmm. And every student, parent can get on to the app Stop It and report anonymously.
Is it anonymously?
Yes.
So yeah, you don't track it back?
We don't have the ability to. Okay. I'm sure there's some technological way to do it, but we don't have access to do that. So we encourage people to come talk to us. We encourage people to keep on reporting and so forth. And I will tell you, surprisingly so to me, is that we have stopped probably four or five active suicides in progress where we were able to contact law enforcement that went out and literally searched and found somebody who was in a state of despair where they were seriously either actively seeking a way or trying to engage in suicidal ideations right then and there. So it's been very successful for us. But they also report acts of violence. We think this is happening, that we heard about this threat, that type of stuff.
We've heard from so many guests that the ultimate last or the first line of defense for everything in this town is the teachers. The schools have been basically, by default, become the most important wall for defending the kids and the community, from mental health to drugs to everything that to school academics, whatever. It's so many parents don't have the time or the knowledge how to deal with these kids. So your typical day. Are you sitting up there in a huge, beautiful office overlooking the Libero, just thinking about ideas, or do you actually get down into and say, "Hey, what's your problem?"
No, so I'm a district level manager. Mm-hmm. Some people would say I have the best job in the world because I'm a district level manager and I have no one who actually works for me. But that being said, I'm there really to assist the school sites. I do sit in my office and say, okay, what's our next challenge? What's our next threat? How do we address this? How do we train for this? Those types of things. Part of my job is foresight and trying to figure out what's going to affect us and how do we combat that. But that being said, a lot of my job is giving sound advice to site administrators and monitoring what's going on through the Stop It app. I get every report throughout the district. So I look at every one of them as they're coming through, and knowing that the site administrators don't always have the time to be checking everything right away. So I check them. And if it's something that they need to jump on right away, I text the administrator who's responsible for that and say, you have a report that you need to look into right now. And
so given your 35 years on the police force, and your involvement in some of the major catastrophes over the years, you've kind of seen it all. So I imagine that when you are, if anything, are going to bend towards being careful. That is, if you see a report that looks like maybe it's something that you're going to jump on, and not take as just like, it's not such a big deal. And I guess that's something you try to imbue in the people that you're consulting with.
Yes.
You're working with.
Yeah, so my real perspective comes in at we need to address this at the appropriate level, right? We don't need to take this super serious if it's not a serious thing. But we need to really start looking at them and analyzing them and examining them to a point where we can make a good decision as quickly as possible. And if we can't make a quick decision, how do we mitigate people from getting hurt, that kind of thing? How do we isolate them and separate them?
And you've seen when people do get hurt. You were the incident commander at IV with that shooting at
That's
UCSB. What did that teach you, that experience?
It taught me a lot of things, right? That was not my first mass shooting that I had responded to. It was this first one that I was the incident commander in. And there was a lot of things that we learned from that. And that was one of the impetus for me taking this job is there's a lot of people who are looking for help that need my kind of experience. And what I learned was there is an awful lot of help that people want to give us during emergencies. And if we don't coordinate that properly, if we don't bring all of the different agencies together, law enforcement, fire, the federal agencies, the state, local agencies, if we don't put them together and work in what we call a unified command, then we're going to be spinning our wheels and it's going to take us much longer. We're going to be less efficient and effective. So what I've been working through as a commander with the Sheriff's Department and with the schools is really working on a unified concept throughout the community, trying to standardize processes with all of our schools, not just our school district, but other districts, to make it easier for law enforcement and fire to figure out what's going on. Because if we're standardized, then we have that ability to really quickly put our hands around the situation and try to effectively solve that problem.
So your planning is not just teaching these kids and the teachers how to behave in a situation. It's also coordinating with first responders in case something happens, in order to make sure that everyone's on the same page.
That's correct. But I'm also teaching law enforcement and fire how we're going to respond And what we're doing, like we touched on threat assessments, we are doing we're instituting a new process in that, and it's new to everybody, and it's based upon federal guidelines, the Secret Service, FBI, and several other combined programs. We're doing that, but I have to teach them what we're doing so when we go to them, they understand we've already been through this process and it's not just a he said, she said kind of thing.
And the thing people probably don't realize, this stuff happens really fast. I think I read somewhere that the average event takes like a minute and a half. That is, this is not something that you got to sit down and open the book up while it's happening. This is quick.
Yeah, that's correct. We have to teach to respond without checklists. We have checklists, but those are to look at when we have a breather and we can say, what have I forgotten to do, right? But we have to teach them how to respond by essentially muscle memory.
So before we go to the break, I have just one question. I'm not looking to start trouble, but I'm just curious. The deputy, I think it was Florida, that didn't go into the school. Was it Florida?
It was Parkland.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of torn between that. If you're just by yourself and there's gunfire, mm-hmm. Should he have gone in, or was he like used as an excuse, or was he wrong? I'm still not sure.
So I don't know all of the circumstances, right? So I'll give you the state of what our training is. Our training is an evolution of processes and after action reviews, and we learn from things. At the time of that incident, we were being trained to engage at one person contact teams. After Columbine, it was four or five people. Through the years, we've evolved to saying, okay, you're going to have to do this. But we've always given it to the option of the deputy or the police officer on scene to see if that was a viable option, because sometimes it's not a viable option. And what that did, regardless of the circumstances, it really took that option away from law enforcement. They really don't have that option any longer. They have to go in. It's one of those things I don't necessarily agree or disagree with. It's just a thing that we have to start taking into account that's our responsibility.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Sansom Clinic. We're there at the beginning.
And all the little and big steps along the way.
200 physicians for your every need.
A healthcare system where all profits go back into our community's health.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system. Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansom Clinic. Good for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
We Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kelly Moore, Santa Barbara Unified School District Safety Coordinator. So our producer, Lisa, found an article yesterday, which I think is really kind of interesting. It's from AP, and it talks about how terrified children are by active shooter drills. And it begins by saying the nation's two largest teachers' unions want schools to revise or eliminate active shooter drills, saying it does more harm than good because of the mental pressure it puts on kids. It basically scares kids. It's better to train the teachers to respond to an active shooter rather than to have students get involved in active. What do you think of that?
So I just briefly skimmed the article this morning. Coincidentally, I was at the school board last night. We were getting our safety plans approved, and Laura Capps brought this up. And so this morning I came in and saw Lisa had forwarded me the article, so I read it. I disagree because I think knowledge is power, and I think power empowers people. I think fear comes out of the unknown of what's going to happen to them or what they need to do to survive any given circumstance. My position is if I can train you to survive, I can tell you what you need to do to survive, then you have exponentially a greater chance of survival than if I leave you out of the equation. Now, if you read the article, there was a lot of examples that were being done that I wouldn't agree with that tactic.
You're not even telling the teachers. You're going to have some guy run into the room just to test them.
Yeah, they're just going to hire some stranger, and then you're going to put them into this stressful situation, and sure, you're going to have problems with it. And there's age appropriateness to all information that we give, whether it's academic or whether it's emergency crisis preparation and response. So I think we have to be very careful about that. Now, if we're going to go there, then we have to also understand that teachers have the same amount of stress, right? So we're always going to have people that are not going to perform well under stress. The issue then becomes, do we stop doing it at all? And the answer to that is we should not. There's a lot of anecdotes that are saying, you know, I don't want my kid to be afraid all the time. Unfortunately, we're in a climate that we have to not be afraid, but we have to know how to respond. And the only way I can teach you how to respond, whether it's at school or at the movie theater or at the shopping center or a restaurant, is teach you what you need to do. And I can do that fairly easy, low stress. And I think we need to do that. But I think we need to do it at an appropriate level and have a good conversation back and forth, not trying to scare you, but saying, look at this is your greatest chance for survival. So let's work through that.
I remember when the Cuban Missile Crisis, for those of you who are younger than me, it was 1962, I believe. And people really thought there was going to be a nuclear war. And in our classroom, they made us go under the desks in order to avoid nuclear. Now, think about that one for a minute. You know, we go under our desk, we're not going to get hit by a nuclear bomb. How much, and I'm not, you know, obviously a lot of everything you do, you believe in, but is there any of this stuff that just over the top scary for like someone in the second grade that really doesn't need to be done, some of this training for these kids?
Well, like I said, there's appropriate levels to appropriate age groups, right? So should we start simulating shooting teachers and moulaging people and having blood, fake blood coming out for second graders? No. And for a second grader, I think we should be focusing more of the instruction on the teachers themselves. But we still have to tell the kids how to behave in a lockdown or a lockout or an evacuation situation or a shelter-in-place situation. In all of those emergencies, we don't focus solely on active shooters. And in fact, most of our active shooter drills, our lockdown drills, involve a scenario that don't involve an active shooter, because what we're really practicing is the response to the emergency. How do we respond? And that response is applicable to several different types of actions in crisis.
So what are the, you know, I know we don't want to use the word best practices because no one's sure what that is, but basically what is the common sense stuff that you teach them?
So common sense is understand what you're being faced with. What keep your situational awareness and react to that. There's a theory-based response that's being taught by Texas State University. It's called avoid, defend, deny. Similar to the run, hide, fight, but it's a little bit more assertive, I guess they say. But part of that is that the natural human response is denial that something's happening, deliberating, oh, I think that was a backfire, not gunfire, and then decisive action. What I'm trying to get people to do is to move into decisive action as quickly as possible, because they've shown the quicker you get into a decisive action and movement, even if it's the wrong one, your chances of survival go way up. So understand what you're being faced with and take decisive action, whether that's hiding under a desk or evacuating or fighting or whatever it is.
So each teacher then has to be aware of, I guess, you have a plan for when you're in the classroom, a plan for when you're in the lunchroom, a plan for you. Do you have plans for every sort of place on the campus that you're going to be?
We don't have a plan. You can't plan for everything. Right? Because you don't know when or under what circumstances the emergency or crisis is going to take place. So what we have to do is teach concepts, what we're trying to accomplish here. And what we're trying to accomplish, if we boil it down into it, is saving lives and preventing injuries, right? So if you understand that, then and you understand what options are available to you, hopefully you'll see the situation, understand the situation that you're involved in, and take the appropriate action to accomplish the overall goal, is preventing death, injuries, and destruction of property.
Is there any instruction for anyone to be proactive, or is it all defensive? Do you ever say if you behind the shooter, grab him, or is it all about hiding and just?
So that's the proactive response to violent acts is the basis behind ALICE training, right? Is really the run, hide, fight portion. It's the fight portion of the run, hide, fight.
That's the end of it.
That's the end of it. But that's the last resort. So what you really, the best option and the best place you can be during any act of violence is somewhere else, right? So if you're not there, you've run or you've evacuated. If you can't do that because of the circumstances that you're faced with, then your next option is to hide from that threat and start planning to respond should somebody penetrate your hiding spot. And then that way you can buy time by fighting back and then hopefully escaping or evacuating while they're trying to get their wits about them.
I think I'm going to stay home from now on. I think it's much safer. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
With some health providers, you get the impression that the final goal is profit. But Sansum Clinic is a nonprofit. Their final goal is health.
Sansum Clinic was started by doctors and is still directed by doctors dedicated to offering the very best in healthcare and healing for our patients.
A nonprofit organization where all earnings go back into continually improving healthcare for our community.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansum Clinic. Good. for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we've been here talking with Kelly Moore, SBUSD Safety Coordinator. Before the break, we were talking about some of the negative aspects of these student protective activities. And, you know, you've been quoted as saying fear is a product of the unknown, so the more that we can push out to people, the better informed they are, the less fear and less concern they have. So what you've been saying is that maybe some of the issues that people are afraid about having these kids go through these drills will eventually reduce the fear because they'll be able to understand what this is about.
Right, and fear is contagious. Right. So if you're fearful and you're in this moment where there's even a stress caused by a drill, mm-hmm. you're going to transfer that fear to the children around you. If you're calm and confident that you're going to do well, they will do well. And that's we know that that's long before Kelly was alive in 1963.
Well, you know, we're in a digital world now, so why can't we have apps that will help us do this? Are there apps out there?
There are, and we have apps. We employ Crisis Go. It's an emergency communications platform that alerts and accounts for kids.
How does it alert? I mean, where does it come from? No, but where does it come from? How does it get to your phone? Like who?
We download the app, and everyone, all of the employees have access to it.
So if I'm a teacher and I see a problem, I can put it on, and then everyone is notified.
Yep, including in their campus. Yes.
Okay. Not law enforcement, though.
They will be. We're connecting that bridge now. That's our next step in law enforcement and fire.
Okay. And the students then are, if they have their phone on it, which not supposed to, will they get a notification too?
They will, but not yet. We haven't moved it. So we're going through this implementation process in stages, and we're trying to get the teachers and the administration really comfortable using the app, using it under the right circumstances in the right manner. And then we'll push that out to the students where they will get the notifications and the parents themselves.
Because on college campuses now, I know that they have apps that just alert you to certain problems, but I think this sounds like it's a little bit more detailed.
It's a little bit more robust, right?
Yeah.
So it's a two-way communication.
Right.
So I can alert anybody, any of the adult staff on campuses can alert anybody because time's money, right? And
time is life in this case.
Well, that's correct. I didn't want to go there, but you're absolutely right. Seconds matter, right? And the old processes were not, they were way too slow. And so we searched for and found this app. And not only can I check in with them, we can check on the rosters. Do you need help? They can let me know where they're at with a push of a button and that they need help. We can send out communications. Hey, this is what's happening. We believe the violent perpetrator is in the northeast side of campus. So if you can get out the southwest side, that's a good escape route. We can do that kind of stuff almost immediately. We first sent that out, activated it during the earthquake drills, the Great Shakeout in October, and I alerted over 800 people within 3 seconds.
Your finger must have hurt. You had to dial
800
different numbers.
One time.
800 different numbers?
Yeah, one time.
Kelly, thank you so much for all you do. We're lucky to have you keeping our kids safe. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll see you next week.